Mic check. Mic check.
Hey there, Titan fans. Welcome to another edition of MCM Radio. This is your host, August West. I am joined, as always, by the man, the myth, the legend, the co-host, Danamite. Dan, you there?
I'm here. How are you, August?
I'm doing pretty well, considering how close of a call that was this past Sunday, where the Titans are now going into the bye week. But let's not waste any time, folks. It's not going to be a surprise. I'm going to put it in the title of the episode, but we have got one of our favorite guests coming on, a guy who's been covering the Titans for a long time. Just one of the best guys to talk about Titans that you're ever going to hear, Mr. Greg Arias. Greg, you there?
Yes, sir. How are you tonight, gentlemen?
Man, we are doing awesome. We're doing awesome. I mean, hey, look, this team is a half a game out of the AFC South championship lead, which is, you know, not saying that whole lot. Probably 8-8 might end up winning this division, but we got to talk about this Bears game that happened. The Titans came out red hot. Marcus Mariota had an amazing first half. The defense looked good. The Bears team is not very good, as their record indicates, as their personnel indicates. However, we saw them sort of take the foot off the gas in the second half and basically came out with a win because the Bears dropped more passes than I think any team in the modern era has. Greg, I'll start it out with you. What was kind of the roller coaster for you watching that game?
Well, you know, it was the start, obviously, as you mentioned, Marcus and the offense doing well and getting out to a big lead and then sitting there and watching it evaporate. And really the thing that stuck with me most when the game was over was the fact that the Titans lost this game. Oh, by the way, on the way to losing this game, something happened. Something that normally doesn't happen for the Titans when they find a way to lose a game, they actually won this thing because of the Bears' ineptitude. And you see that with the Titans. They've done that time and time again over the last few years. They'll have a game in hand, or you think they do, or they're in a close game late, have a chance to win, figure out a way to screw it up. Well, they figured out a way to screw it up and give the game away basically to the Bears on Sunday. And the Bears said, oh, gee, thanks for being generous. We'll give it right back to you by dropping that first down pass that would have been the game-winning touchdown. The fourth down pass was a tougher catch. The first one was simple. It should have been made. And the Titans, in all honesty,
yeah,
should have lost that football game.
Yeah,
Dan, what did you take away from that?
For me, it's really, like Greg said, this team last year would have lost that game, for sure. There's no doubt in my mind. But, I mean, they came out red hot. That was great to see. I thought we were on, another Green Bay Packers-esque performance there for a little while, and then it all fell apart on them. It just goes to show how easily leads can be blown in the NFL, but... I mean, it was definitely discouraging seeing them just kind of hand the game back to Chicago. But again, you see a lot of people out there complaining on Twitter and this, that, and the other, saying that they should have lost, and it feels more like a loss than it does a win. But it's not, and it brings us up to 6-6, which is huge for this team after the last 2 years.
So,
well, guys,
two thoughts I had about this
six.
Game. Go ahead, Greg.
No, I was just going to say 6-6. In the NFL, a win is a win. You take them any way you can get them. It doesn't feel like a loss. It feels like a game that the Titans escaped because the Bears were more inept than the Titans, and we're not really used to seeing that. Perhaps maybe that's why some people think it feels like a loss, because we're used to seeing the Titans squander those games, and yet they were the beneficiary to get away with the win when the Bears had the opportunity to win the game and simply just drop the football.
Yeah, one of the thoughts I had watching this game, and if you go back and look at my Twitter feed, I never really panicked. Even as we were blowing the lead, Because I think we've all watched the NFL long enough to know that whether or not you believe in the football gods, there are just certain things that happen over the course of NFL games. You cannot make as many mistakes as the Bears did, you know, in terms of their wide receivers. I mean, they had more drops than I think any other team has had in the modern NFL. I think it was 11 confirmed drops. I've seen this Titans team drop or not catch as many passes as that, and the football gods will just not let you win a game, it seems like, when you make that many mistakes. So for that reason, I didn't freak out. Also, I just felt like even if we'd have, if they'd have scored that last touchdown and we had 40 seconds left, that Mariota and that offense probably would have been able to put together a drive against that defense, which was so lacking in talent, you know, to come back and win. The only thing that concerned me out of the entire game was I really felt like, and I said this in the preview episode, it felt like a trap game because I was afraid the Titans were looking forward to the bye week. You know, it's the last week that you can have in the bye. They played a big, long stretch. They've stayed relatively healthy, but those guys are tired. And the secondary especially has looked worse and worse every single week. Greg, did you get the feeling that maybe when they came out hot in the first half, that they just sort of let off the gas and were looking forward to going into a week's rest?
I think there's something to that, that there might have been a little bit of a let up, but there were some also some questionable things to me in the course of the game that I just really don't understand. And obviously hindsight's 20/20, and you can go back and second guess Mike Mularkey and Terry Robiskie and some of the calls. But to me, and I've said this several times, especially on that last Titans possession prior to the Bears drive that ended on the fourth down there, I don't understand why Derrick Henry wasn't in the football game. This is a kid that, and no disrespect at all to DeMarco Murray, he has been absolutely fabulous. He is a great guy in the locker room. He is a great guy to talk to. He's smart. He has played far and above what most people expected of him when he got here. But he is still battling that toe issue, whether he wants to come out and say it or not. And I give him credit for not using that as an excuse and not wanting to complain and being a warrior and going out there every week, strapping it up and giving his best effort. And he certainly had a huge contribution with his reception yards and his rushing yards combined. But on that particular day, in that particular game, Derrick Henry was the better running back. And why that young man was not in the football game on that last drive, on that last play, when they used that crazy shovel pass to DeMarco Murray is absolutely beyond me. You take Derrick Henry in that situation, you put the football in his hands, and you say, get me 2 yards, get me a first down, we'll win this ball game, and Chicago never has a chance to throw that pass that should have been caught, and we're not talking about any of this.
Okay.
Dan. Go ahead, August.
Dan, sorry, let me jump in. We've been talking about this I've been harping on it for at least 3 weeks. We've been talking about it for 3 or 4 weeks. If you remove the 75-yard run that DeMarco Murray had with the Packers, his average per carry is under 3 yards now. I get that he's the workhorse. I get that he's a veteran guy. He's setting the tone. He's great in the locker room. He's the leader. That Mike Mularkey attributes a lot of this offense consistency and that sort of stuff. But there is a role for Derrick Henry that this team is not respecting, and it's a stubbornness that is hurting this team. And as flexible and as smart and as good of adjustments as they've made, that's the one thing that seems to be holding this team back. Why in the world do you ever have a third or a fourth down that's under 2 or 3 yards when really there's 4 guys who can run the ball? Jaelson Fowler, Marcus Mariota, Derrick Henry, and DeMarco Murray. DeMarco Murray is the least effective guy to run that right now, but he's the guy who keeps getting those carries.
Well, that's a good question, and that has been posed to Mike, and he kind of and obviously you guys know NFL coaches. They're not going to come out and necessarily tell you the truth. They may not lie to you, but they're not going to give you the full inside view that you want to, you know, when you ask that type of question. And it's no, and again, it's no disrespect towards DeMarco Murray. If that guy's 100% healthy, I've got no problem with he being the guy on third or fourth down to get the football. But he is not. He is not healthy. He's giving it everything he's got, and that's all to his credit. And the Titans should use him because he is a heck of a receiver out of the backfield. He had another five catches in that game, and those were big catches in important times to help the Titans move the football. So I'm not saying that he should not be playing because he's injured, but I'm saying on third down and 2 yards or fourth down and 2 yards, when you need those 2 yards and you've got a 6'3", 240, whatever he is today, pound running back that is as fresh and strong as this kid is, that he's my guy in that game on Sunday, the way he had ran the football, that he's getting the ball to try to get me those 2 yards. It's not about DeMarco Murray being anything bad. It's simply the fact that on that day, I was the better choice to run the football for those 2 yards. And again, if you get that first down, it's all over. The Bears never touched the football. We never have any of this other going on, and everybody's going, the Titans made the right choice, because it was obvious when you look at the way they were running, and you guys know this, there's certain backs and certain players, receivers, quarterbacks, whatever, that are good against certain teams. Andrew Luck against the Titans. He's invincible against the Titans for whatever reason. He has their number. On Sunday, Derrick Henry was running the football and had the Bears' number, and he's the guy that, to me, should have been in there to get those 2 yards on that fourth down play.
Well, Greg, what do you think this is all about here? Like, let's take Malarkey's comments aside. If you can deduce what this is about, is it something, is it a gentleman's agreement that they had prior to trading for him or after they drafted Derrick Henry? Is there some kind of clause in his contract that requires that he touch the ball the majority of the time? Is it anything like that? Or, you know, me and August have kind of been banging our heads against the wall the last few weeks trying to figure this thing out, and it, you know, no one seems to have a clue.
I don't know the details of his contract and if there is a clause in there, but it really wouldn't matter at this point in time, because you go back and look, and how many carries has Derrick Henry had over the last three or four games prior to Chicago on Sunday, where he had the 8 carries? He didn't have a single carry the week before in Indianapolis. So you give him one more carry in Sunday in Chicago, or on Sunday in Chicago, that's not going to change the dynamic of what DeMarco's doing or the percentage of the carries that he's getting, even if it is a clause. Now, the thing is, and I understand that sometimes there are clauses. Again, I don't know if there is in his contract. I have not seen it. But if there is, and Mike understands this and is trying to get him to that number of carries, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with being loyal to a guy that has come in and been everything you hoped he would be when you got him, on the field, off the field, in the locker room, whatever. There's not a bad word to be said about DeMarco Murray. So if Mike is trying to get him to a certain number of carries, that's fine. But you've also got to win the football game. And one more carry for the guy that's better on that day. I'm not saying Henry's better than DeMarco overall. I'm saying on that day he was. And that one more carry is not going to change what's going to ultimately happen with the contract in the end with DeMarco Murray and him getting the number that he needs to get. I would think that if there is some type of clause in the contract, it would be based more on yardage than carries.
Yeah, and I think we're all three in agreement that it's more so an issue of, like, there is clearly a role for Derrick Henry, and why you don't just – I mean, this entire offense is based on everybody has a role. Everybody does a specific thing very well, and they're not doing that when it comes to the running back rotation. However, as much as we've harped upon the offense, it's really the defense that is hustling backwards on this team. I mean, when you look at the Football Outsider ranks over the first half of the season, this was a top 13 or 14 defense, and now they're all the way down to about 25. This defense keeps moving backwards. Obviously, there's issues in the secondary. We'll talk about Paris Cox here in a second. But outside of him, Greg, what do you think is the reason that this defense is not performing as well as it did earlier in the season?
It's the secondary, and it's the fact that there are some older guys, and no disrespect to these guys, but you look at the ages. When you talk about Jason McCourty, you talk about Parrish Cox, you talk about Rashad Johnson, Denora Searcy, these are some guys that have got a few years on them. They've been involved in a lot of football games. They've played some good football. They've had their share of collisions and tackles and things, and I think, as one of you guys mentioned a little earlier, this is the team that's getting a little tired trying to get to this bye week, and in doing so, these older guys have struggled a little bit, and the age obviously has a factor in that, and the secondary just has not played as well. Now, give credit to the Bears on Sunday, because they didn't allow the Titans pass rush. They didn't allow Brian Arakpo, Jarrell Casey, Derek Morgan to be able to have time to get to the quarterback, because everything they were doing was 3-5-step drops. He's throwing the football on time. There was no stand in the pocket, read the field, look around, wait for somebody to get open and give those guys, those rushers guys, a chance to be able to get to him. So that was part of it, the fact that the pressure wasn't there as much because he wasn't giving the rushers the time. But still, your guys in the secondary should be able to cover a little bit better, and they didn't do that. Now, I want to see what happens come next week after the bye, after they've had the time off, they've got some rest, they've hopefully gotten off their feet and legs and tried to recoup a little bit and done the things they need to do. If they come back and play better going forward down this last four games after the break, or if they continue to struggle, and when you go back and look, they've struggled against Cody Kessler from Cleveland, Matt Barkley with Chicago. You would expect that maybe against Aaron Rodgers. You would expect that against Andrew Luck, Blake Bortles. They did well against Bortles in Jacksonville through the first three quarters. Now, he threw for over 300 yards, but a lot of it was in garbage time in the fourth quarter, where I think he had, if memory serves, 186 passing yards in the fourth quarter. So throw that game out. But you look at these others and you see Kessler and you see Barkley able to light him up for 300 yards, and that's definitely concerning. It wouldn't concern me as much if you said Andrew Luck or you said Aaron Rodgers threw for 300 yards against them. That's kind of expected. But when Kessler and Barkley are doing it, that's where the issue comes in, and that's where the Titans have to do something about this secondary. And it will obviously, there's nothing can be done now. You play out the string with what you've got and hope that the rest helps. But you're looking at free agency in the draft next year. And to me right now, the only guy in that secondary unit that has a job is Kevin Byard. Everybody else could potentially be back, but I think there's some guys playing for some positions. And obviously, Kalen Reed just coming up from the practice squad. You don't really know what you've got in him, a draft pick from last year. I would think he and LaShawn Sims would be safe. But for just talking about it, I'm going to go out and say that Byard is probably the only guy that you can count on being there. If they can find upgrades over everybody else, I certainly think they would do that.
Well, they definitely need it. And, you know, I've been batting the idea around with some of my friends out here, and it's like, are we going to go out and try to – because, I mean, if you look at the cornerback pool and free agency coming up, it's not impressive all that much. So, I mean – They're definitely going to have to sink some resources into it. But what kind of concerned me the most on Sunday was the lack of pressure. Now, I know a lot of that is on the secondary, and I'm just so used to the secondary being completely horrible with the exception of like an interception here and there at the right time. That's the thing with the Titans' defense right now. You know, they've been playing bend but don't break, but they're having to get those turnovers and everything at the exact right time, and it happened twice on Sunday. But the lack of pressure was really kind of concerning for me. It didn't help matters any at all.
Yeah, that's true. It didn't, but again, I put a lot of that on Chicago in their game plan. Just by getting the football out so quick and not allowing the Titans a lot of times to have time to get there because the ball was coming out so quick. Now, I do think that the Titans need another pass rusher, be it as a defensive end, as a down guy on the line, whether it's another linebacker, whether it's an inside linebacker. somewhere they've got to find another guy. I think Kevin Dodd can be a guy to do that for them and add to the mix, but he struggled a little bit, had the foot injury obviously early, hasn't played up to speed, has been inactive for a few games because of his lack of production to this point in time. I think he'll get it. I don't think he's a lost cause. I don't think people should, you know, be negative about that draft pick at this point in time. Let it play out. But they need another draft pick, and I think they need to take one of those two first-round picks and invest it in one of the top cornerbacks in this draft. I think they need to go out in free agency and get one, and I'll throw out a name for you guys, Stephon Gilmore from Buffalo. He's a guy that's finishing up his first contract. I feel like he's on the ascent. He's a guy that can come in and be a guy to take one of those corners. And then perhaps maybe if McCourty is healthy and if you think he's got enough juice left to bring him back next year, you put him there as a veteran and you bring in whomever you draft. And I'll tell you this, I personally like Desmond King, the kid out of Iowa. I think he is as good as any of the rest of the top names that you're hearing about. In Tabor and Wilson out of Florida and Jabril Peppers, who's not really a corner to me. He's a hybrid guy that certainly I'd like to have him if the Titans were to draft him. I think there's a place for him to play in this league, but I'm not sure it's at corner, and they certainly need one. So King is my guy. If I could get King and Gilmore together to come in with Kevin Byard, you're going to have to do some other things in safety. I think you maybe bring in another free safety in the free agency period, perhaps draft one in the middle rounds, third, fourth, something like that. And then I think you've got a good fix on the way to getting that back end corrected to go along with what you've got. Now, obviously, you can add, as I said, a pass rusher. I think you need another inside linebacker that can play because, to me, right now, for next year, Woodyard and Williamson, if both are back, Williamson will be. We don't know about Woodyard. I think those are two down linebackers. You need another Sean Spence type of guy that can come in and play linebacker in pass situations. I think you can find one of those in the draft. If you can do all those things, you've shored up this defense and you've given Dick LeBeau some more toys to kind of play with this thing.
So to go back to a second, probably the biggest news that's come out since the Bears game is the fact that the Titans cut Parris Cox. Okay, now I've been a guy who studied defense for a long time. I've always been in love with a lot of things Dick LeBeau has done. And I said, as soon as Dick LeBeau took over this defense, Parris Cox is kind of the antithesis of the cornerback that he likes. Parris Cox is a gambler. You know, he's a guy who is a boomer bust. He'll give up big plays. He'll also make big plays. But he's not the consistent sort of cornerback that this guy, you know, really prefers to run on the outside of his defense. Now, I think Parris Cox, you know, batted down enough passes. He got burned some earlier in the season. He was able to sort of, I think, keep the coaching staff a little bit enough on his side. However, he's completely fallen off the map over the past couple of weeks. That being said, there is really no depth behind him. I mean, Bryce McCain, Valentino Blake, those guys have done absolutely nothing. You know, LaShawn Sims and Kalen Reed, they're completely unknown. But, Greg, I have to ask you, if you had to guess, who was the person inside the Titans who walked in, put the hammer on the table, and said, we have to let this guy go?
John Robinson. Without a doubt. I don't think that it was a move that Mike Mularkey would have made. He might have been for it, but I don't think it was a move he would have made on his own and went in and said that to Robinson. I think it was Robinson's call. He went to Mularkey, and I don't know this is fact. I've not been told this. This is just my opinion on it, that Robinson went to Mularkey and said, I want to get rid of this guy. Let's bring the young kid up. Let's play him, and let's see what he can do and find out with four games left for next season, you know, what we've got. Now, here's the head-scratching part about it to me, guys. And certainly John Robinson has earned his stripes with this team so far with what he's done. There's not much that you can look at and criticize him for, and I'm not going to do it here, but I am going to scratch my head and say this. You've got David Flewellen, and no disrespect to Flewellen. He's a good kid, really nice young gentleman. But you brought him up because you had Derrick Henry with the injury that was going to miss some time, and you were unsure about the situation, and you wanted to make sure you had your running back covered. Henry's back. You gave him 8 carries on Sunday. Antonio Andrews didn't get a single carry. Fluellen was inactive for the game. Why not send Fluellen back down to the practice squad? That clears your spot. Bring Kalen Reed up and keep Parrish Cox on the roster for the simple fact that, yes, he's struggling. He's given up more yards than any cornerback and missed more tackles than any cornerback in the league through the first 12 games of the season. But still, he is a veteran guy, and he is a guy that if you have an injury that you can put in there. And I know they went out and they signed DeJohn Smith to the practice squad. He was a third-round guy by the Colts that had an injury, and they got fed up with waiting on him, put him on the street, and he's kind of bounced around, and maybe he turns into something for the Titans. But that, to me, would have been the move if I were John Robinson. And obviously they know details I don't. Perhaps there was an issue with Parrish Cox in the locker room. Maybe they went to him, and I don't know this as a fact either, so, you know, I'm not saying this is...
There has to be.
Yeah, I'm not saying this is what happened because I don't know. Because Parrish Cox had been a great guy in the locker room. He was always a guy that you could walk in there and walk up to him and, hey, Parrish, you got a minute to talk to me? Yeah, you know, maybe he'd say, hey, let me take a shower first after practice or after a game, and then I'll get back with you when I get done. But he was always willing to talk and stand up and do that part. Respected guy in the locker room. But perhaps they went to him and said, hey, we're benching you. You're done. We're going to put the other guy up in front of you. And maybe there was an incident that took place. Perhaps he was the one that said, hey, just release me then. Just let me go. That's happened in the past with players. They'll go in and ask for their release. I don't know that we're ever going to find out exactly what happened, because unless Parrish Cox tells it, I can promise you you're not going to hear it from John Robinson or Mike Mularkey.
I think it's interesting just the timing of it. I mean, the secondary is hurting so badly that it feels like you just need every single body available, no matter who it is. And to let him go, maybe – I don't know why they just couldn't have benched him for the last 4 games. And if this kid didn't work out, they could have thrown him back in there. Now, in my mind, they kind of put themselves in a little bit of a risky position.
Well, my thought was, when we signed Parrish Cox, I mean, the scouting report on him, and what I've kept saying that I thought was that he's a better nickelback than he is on the outside. So I would have thought that, you know, when they talked about 2 weeks ago, you know, shaking up the depth chart or the roster when it comes to the cornerback spot, you know, put somebody else on the outside and let him play in the nickel. But like you said, I mean, I feel like there has to be something that went on in the locker room or something that he wasn't happy with. The fact that they said, look, we're looking at changing things up, and then they started him, and then he had one of his worst games as a professional, there's no way you can look past that.
No, and John Robinson has said this, and we know from his time being with New England and what the Patriots do, they are not afraid to make moves. They are not afraid to take a guy. And, well, look at what they did this year. Chandler Jones, who was not a guy that was washed up. Jamie Collins.
Yeah.
They sent him to Cleveland. I mean, that's the Patriot way. And John Robinson grew up in that system. And this is going to be similar, I think, with him.
Well, if we traded DGB for an offensive lineman, granted, Dennis Kelly has been awesome for us, but, I mean, you know, they made several moves that are like, look, dude, if you're not going to, you know, if you're not going to produce for us, then that's just the way it's going to be. So, I think.
And I appreciate that.
Into, yes. Yeah, I agree with that. The Parrish Cox one, that felt a little weird to me. However, I think it's no accident that they did it right before the bye week. But, Greg, I want to go ahead and kick off sort of a recap of where the Titans are right now. You have been in the trenches, and Dan, you have as well, covered this team through thick and thin for some good times and some bad times. But, Greg, I just want to get an idea from you. What is it like covering the Titans day in and day out right now when they've had such a turnaround, when Marcus Mariota has had such an ascension, And things feel so different as compared to the past 2 years?
Well, the biggest thing is that when you walk into the locker room, you don't get the same questions every week. Why did you lose today? Like the last 2 years, most of the time you go in the locker room after a game and you're asking questions about the Titans blowing a game some kind of way or not even showing up and being blown out 38-10. And guys get tired of hearing that. We get tired of asking it. They get tired of answering it, and it just gets to be tired and boring. Now, when you can go in, yes, there have been six games they've lost, and all of them have been close games, and they probably should have won a couple when you go back and look at it. You could say that Minnesota was certainly a game that they should have won. Marcus's turnovers obviously were huge in that. You could go back and look at a couple of other games that they had opportunities and say maybe they should have won those. But at least now at 6-6, when you go in there, you're able to ask them at least half the time about happy things. Hey, big win today. What went right? What happened that you guys, were able to get the win? And guys are wanting to talk. They're happy. They're more interested in talking. And I think the entire attitude of the franchise has changed a lot. You go back and you got to give Amy Adams Strunk a lot of credit for this because of the things she did. The renovation of the locker room. The money that she put in, I don't know, Dan, I don't think you've been in there, have you? But I know you've probably seen pictures of it. It's amazing. It's as good as anything in the NFL, with maybe the exception of the Dallas Cowboys and, what they've got down there that's got everything under the sun that you could think of in their locker room. That place is just crazy. But this is a first-class deal that they've done with that, and they've been able to do all these other things, too, little things, for the team that have improved the attitude, and that's really the biggest thing that's the difference between then and now. And obviously, when those guys are happy, it makes it easier for us to walk into a locker room during the week after practice or after a game especially, and they're more willing to talk on a win than they are on a loss, because I have not heard a single player in the locker room this year after a game not willing to talk, where in years past, you would go in when they've lost seven or eight straight and ask a guy, and he says, hey, I'm not talking today. They're frustrated, they're tired, they're fed up, they just didn't want to deal with it. You're not getting that this year.
I'm not in the Nashville area anymore or anything like that, but what's the fan reaction been to? Because, after a certain amount of time, let's say we were – 4-11 last year, but the year before the Titans were 6-6 or 8-8 even. To come back from two completely horrible years, easily the worst two in the franchise's history, what's the reaction been like out there on the streets? Are you seeing more interest in the Titans now than we did a year or so ago? Are people, still commenting on it in like high traffic areas? Because there was a time where no one wanted to talk about this team at all.
I'll say,
it's definitely improved. The apathy of the fan base has started to fade. Now, it hasn't with everybody. You're always going to have some that, are going to hang on and wait till this team gets to 10 wins or 11 or 12 or whatever, gets into the playoffs and wins a couple of games before they say, okay, we're finally back to being a contender again. That's going to happen with some, but for the most part, the apathy is changing. You go back and look at some of these games where in the last couple of years, when you walked into Nissan Stadium, you were almost expecting for it to be a partisan crowd for the visiting team. Cleveland a few years ago, when they came in, did that. They had more fans wearing Browns jerseys and hats and apparel than there were Titans fans in that stadium. That didn't happen this year with that game. The Titans fans are showing up. It's not been completely full. There's been empty seats. You can look around the stadium and see that. And I think that will change as this team begins to win even more and more, which I think they're going to in the future. But that's been the biggest thing. The fans are not apathetic anymore. They're interested. They're going, okay, this team is better. We can see this team is markedly better. It's not a Super Bowl contender yet. I don't think anybody in their right mind would tell you that. But it is certainly a much better football team. We're not going to be drafting this year in the top five, probably not in the top 10 unless they just totally fall apart here and don't win another game and finish 6-10, and then we'll obviously have to see where it shakes out. But, you know, to me, and I don't say this to be negative, but if they did lose out and finish 6-10, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for me. And here's why, guys, because one more draft, they have two first-round picks. Now, I don't think they're going to keep both those picks. I think John Robinson's going to move one. Remember, they don't have a second-round pick right now. I think one of those two gets dealt for other picks to add a second rounder and a third rounder, whatever else he can get for it, and they take one in the first. But another big draft is not going to hurt this team, and drafting as high as possible one more year is not going to hurt them to be able to add more talent, a higher level of talent, obviously, in each round to help with the rebuild of this thing. So I wouldn't think it's the worst thing in the world if they did lose out. Now, it'll be disappointing. Certainly the fans may not like that thought. But for me, just looking at it from a realistic sense, if I felt like this team had a shot at winning a Super Bowl, then I'd want them to win. I don't think they've got a shot at that. So at 6 wins right now, that's more than they've had in the last 2 years combined. It's a better team, and I'm looking at the long term of this and seeing, okay, there's not really a negative for me if they do lose these final four ball games and wind up 6-10, because the draft and what they can do with that is just as important for the future as maybe winning 3 or 4 more games this year and getting in the playoffs and getting blown out in the first round by the Patriots or somebody in New England, and then you're done.
All right, Greg, I love you to death, but I totally disagree. I think it would be the greatest thing in the world if this team makes the playoffs, because if they can fix even slightly the issues in the secondary, nobody is going to want to play this team. With how good Marcus is in clutch situations, how good he is at the end of the first half, as good as he is at the end of the second half, with the way we can run the ball, if we're able to give Derrick Henry more carries. And that Rams pick has a very good chance to end up being in the top 10. I think right now it's slated to be the 6th overall pick. With the way the draft is going to shake out right now, we have a ton of money for free agency. We don't have any significant free agents to re-sign. I think it would be the best thing in the world if the Titans are able to thread the needle and get into the playoffs. And I'm saying that they got to thread the needle because we have two brutal games coming up with the Broncos and with the Chiefs. And then we have the two divisional games to sort of wrap it up. So I guess what it comes down to, do you think that this coaching staff – okay, look, I scratched that question. Give me a good story about Marcus Mariota. You're a guy who's in there in the locker room, who's in there for the post-game stuff. We've seen the giant leap that he's taken in his second year. Give the fans a little taste of what this guy is outside of the field.
Well, let me go back one thing on what we were just saying, and then I'll answer that question. I'm not saying that it would be bad for them to win out and make the playoffs. I simply mean that it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if they did lose and got a little bit higher draft pick from that standpoint. To me, it's a win either way. If you win out and get to the playoffs, that's great. But if you lose out, you've still improved this season, and I'm thinking about the draft and what they can do there to help in the future. So that's kind of where I am with that. But as far as Marcus, what you see is what you get. He is one of the most humble young men, the most polite, nice guy he truly is. He is that way. What you see is Marcus. He's unpretentious. He's quiet. He's laid back. He's very friendly. You ask him a question, and – you know, I've spent more time talking to him because the Titans are very cautious about his in front of the media time. He has one interview, one practice during the week where he speaks to the media, and after games, obviously, he goes to the podium and does his thing there. Those are the only two times you're going to talk to this guy. We spend a lot of time in the locker. Well, I shouldn't say a lot of time, but you go by and he's sitting in his locker, or they're, putting golf balls or playing a little basketball in the locker room. He's back in the corner, the quarterbacks, along with Ryan Succop, Brett Kern, and Bo Brinkley. They've got one of those little basketball rims that hangs on the locker and a little rubber basketball, and sometimes they're back there shooting that, just goofing around, blowing off a little steam after practice. And you just talk to him, and he is just a normal guy. If you didn't know who he was, if you met him on the street and he wasn't an NFL player, you'd love him. He's just that kind of person. And he talks about golf. He and I have actually talked about playing golf at some point in time together, because I'm pretty terrible at it. He says he is too. So he might actually be somebody, even though he's a professional athlete, that I might be able to beat at golf. So maybe one of these days I'll actually get to do that. I don't know if he's serious about it, but we've certainly had the conversation in passing, just joking around. But he is just a genuine, nice young man. It's yes, sir. It's no, sir. He's just that. That's it. There is no pretentiousness about him. He's just humble, laid back, and he fits Nashville with his personality and how he is, and the hospitality portion of it, and the just nice guy. That's just Marcus.
If you had to give one player through 12 games so far this season, most valuable player to the Titans so far, who would that be?
Oh, that's a loaded question, because I think you've probably got four or five guys that you could put in that conversation. Marcus, obviously, what he has meant to the team is, and the way he has played has been, far and above what a lot of people probably thought he was going to do this year, especially after struggling a little bit in that first game against Minnesota. You're thinking, okay, we're maybe in for another long year. He has come out and been lights out. He's now got himself, I'm not saying he's going to go to the Pro Bowl, but he certainly got himself in the conversation for being Pro Bowl worthy, at least right now. And obviously, if he continues on, he's reaching some rarefied air, because the record for touchdown passes in a season for the franchise, the Oilers/Titans, is 34. And he's at 25 right now. He's got four games left. He may not get to 34, but I think he's certainly probably going to get over 30, which would be another mark that's going to put him in conversations with names like George Blanda and Warren Moon. So the Pro Bowl is not out of the question for him at this point. And then you look at DeMarco Murray. I think he's a guy that you could say is a most valuable player candidate for this team. Offensively, you look at Rishard Matthews. This is a guy that has set career highs in receptions and touchdowns already. He was a guy that was brought in to be probably a number two receiver for this team, because the Titans were certainly hopeful that DGB would have been the number one guy. And then you've got a guy in Matthews that can, take up the slack from there. He's been far better, I think, than anybody expected him to be. And I think he's a guy that would get some consideration. And then defensively, Jarrell Casey and Brian Arakpo, and those guys, we know what they have done so far this season with that defense. So really there's five guys. I don't know that I could say for sure one over the others, but I guess if you pressed me and I had to, I'd have to say Marcus. He would have to be the guy simply because of the numbers he's putting up. But I certainly all of those guys, I think, are worthy of consideration for it.
Okay, I'll ask you one more loaded question. I'm going to talk about Dan's favorite player. What is your read on Taylor Lewan and how he's received in the locker room, considering, the guy's been ejected, he's had a couple up and down, issues over the course of the season, but he has played so extremely well. I mean, almost at an all-pro level at certain point. He was a guy that when Ken Whisenhunt was here, they sort of made him the vocal part of the offense, and then obviously that was taken away. So where's Taylor Lewan as a person right now?
Taylor is growing up. Not to say that he was a total immature jerk or baby or anything negative when he got here, but he's growing up. He's had to learn some tough lessons. Now, I go back, and you mentioned the ejection. I don't really put that much stock into the ejection. Yes, it's bad. Don't get me wrong. You never want your starting left tackle to be out of the game in the first quarter. But that one, I give him a pass, because Guyon took a cheap shot at Marcus Mariota and Lewan went to his quarterback's defense, and nobody in the NFL, any player, is going to blame him for standing up for his quarterback. Now, you think about it and you go back and you look at the video, he wasn't really looking at the official when he put his hands on the official. It's not like he picked this guy up and body slammed him. This guy kind of stepped in front, trying to play peacemaker. Lawan, 6'7". This official is maybe 6 foot. Taylor's mad. He's looking at his target of his anger, and he kind of shoved the guy's hands away from him. It was wrong, but the intentions and the reason he was doing it to protect his quarterback weren't the worst thing in the world, and that was very well received by his teammates. Now, obviously, I think the coaches probably, you know, said, okay, we understand, we get it, but you've got to learn when to turn it on and when to turn it off. You know, if he gets a 15-yard penalty for going and smacking guy on in the head, the Titans accept that and they move on. But when you go as far as to get to the point where you get ejected, then you've hurt the team. Dennis Kelly stepped in and saved him. But that's something, and that was a learning experience from him. But I'll give him credit because a lot of people may not know this or may not have thought this, but we were talking when we were heading down to the locker room after that game, and a lot of us were like, oh, Taylor's gone. He's out the building. You know, he probably stuck around till the game was over, and he left so he won't have to address the media. Uh-uh. He was showered, he was dressed, and he was waiting on us when we walked in the door. He stood up, he talked, he said the right things, he, you know, expressed, hey, I'm not apologizing for what I did initially because I'm going to protect my quarterback, but I got to learn when to turn it off. And, you know, that's a sign of maturing. And that won brownie points with his teammates for the way he handled it. And you go back to Chicago on Sunday and look, right before the half, he got that 15-yard face mask penalty. But he got that penalty protecting his quarterback. That wasn't the worst penalty in the world. And I'm thinking that was actually a pretty good penalty because, yes, it was 15 yards, but that drive was going nowhere. The half was ending, and he didn't allow his quarterback to get hit.
Yep. Yeah, and I loved it. Marcus said after he got ejected, basically like, look, you can't get ejected, but I appreciate what you were trying to do.
That was
so
the
Greg,
message.
We're going to go ahead and wrap. Yep. So, Greg, we're going to wrap this thing up. Tell us where everybody can find you, online, on your podcast, everything.
Well, I am doing a podcast with Terry McCormick and with Brad Hopkins, the former Titans left tackle. It's called Locked On Titans. It's on the Locked On Podcast Network. And, of course, I'm no longer with Scout, but I am writing some for Terry McCormick and Titan Insider and doing that podcast with those guys and got a couple things in the works that I can't really talk about now, but we'll see how those turn out here in the near future. Probably nothing that's going to happen this year, but looking forward to next year, obviously. But you can find me on those. Still, the Twitter is still the same, at TNFB Scout. And, guys, I appreciate it as always. It's always fun to be with you guys.
Absolutely, man. You are one of the best guests we have. And, man, have a good night.
You too, guys. Thanks again.
Take it easy, Greg.
Good. Greg is always awesome.
He really loves his Alabama boys. You can tell that he has a deeper relationship with them than he might with some of the rest of the team. And that little speech he gave about Derrick Henry, even though I'm already on that side of the fence, it moved me. So hopefully somebody out there is listening.
All right, man. I want to get your reaction to the Paris Cox being cut, a guy who's been a starter for the past year and a half for us, a guy who is, like I said, been boomer bust. You know, however, the one thing that struck me about this was that Bryce McCain has been one of the worst slot cornerbacks that has existed in the NFL. And Valentino Blake is obviously terrible. They haven't seen enough out of LeSean McCoy. What's his name? LeSean Sims.
Sims.
They haven't seen enough out of Sims. you know, to really start him. They elevated Kalen Reed. I mean, what do you think that's really the smart move for this team to make when they're trying to make a playoff push?
I don't. I mean, you know, I kind of teetered on the edge of that whenever Greg was on the air, but it kind of struck me as weird. Like, everybody's throwing these horrible stats out about Parris Cox and everything like that. But let's be real here. We've always known what he was. After we figured out that he wasn't really an outside guy, you know, one that you could probably put there and rely on a regular basis, we found that out last year. But he is a gambler, and he is a guy who has a nose for the ball and comes up with interceptions, you know, when the time is right. I mean, it's happened several times. But if you look up and down this depth chart, the secondary, especially in the corner position, is just complete garbage from head to toe. I mean, I love Jason McCourty.
People are being so hard on Jason McCourty. He has been great this year. The problem is they throw at every cornerback that he's not covering.
I agree. And, you know, that's something else that Greg said. I was like, that, you know, Byard's the only guy in the secondary that's guaranteed a job. Jason McCourty has been the best cornerback we've got. I mean, really and truly, if we didn't have him out there, we would have nothing. But
part of the reason our secondary fell apart, and the reason the entire defense fell apart over the last half, especially in the fourth quarter of the Bears game, was the fact that McCourty got banged up and they pulled him out. And then I think Garrett Morgan got banged up and they pulled him out. Everybody who even got nicked a little bit, they pulled him out because I'm saying – they were trying to coast into the bye week.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they were. I mean, people closely associated with the organization aren't going to want to say that, but, I mean, there's no other excuse for it. I mean, I don't know if it's something in, we've got this big lead, we're going to change up the scheme a little bit and take it easy, or if it was just on the player's part. Either way, that defense rested on their laurels the entirety of the second half. They were spent up by the time that second half was over, and that they were trying to coast. There's no two ways around it.
Yep, what that half, especially the fourth quarter, I guess, showed to me was that, yes, we have to have a lot of talent influx in the secondary. However, our middle linebacker position is where we could really use a dominant player. Wesley Woodyard is sort of hanging on. Avery Williamson, I love him. He's really good, but he's not a dominant player in that position. I think if we can get a really, really good middle linebacker, somebody who can rush the A-gap, somebody who could do those stunts really well, it'll make everything easier. Because our defensive line for a 3-4 defense is good, but not necessarily great, especially when it comes to up the middle. If you have a middle linebacker who can make up for that, it's going to help us out so, so much. However, you know, like we were talking about earlier, the Titans have a ton of money. When it comes to the salary cap, there's not a lot of great cornerbacks who are out on the market, but there are a couple like Tremaine Jackson and a couple other guys who are out there that can really help us. You combine that with the draft pick, and this team can be really, really good. However, we're going to go ahead and wrap this thing up with the fact that the Titans probably need to win 3 out of their next 4 games. However, they're playing the Broncos and the Chiefs. Which one of those games do you think we have to win?
I feel like we stand a better chance of beating the Broncos. The Broncos have been stagnant at times on offense. I mean, their defense is a handful, and so is Kansas City's, but – I just feel like Kansas City matches up so well against us that if we don't come out and win that game against the Broncos, we're probably going to be in some deep trouble.
See, I kind of agree. If we don't win the game against the Broncos, I won't be totally despondent. I think the Chiefs game is the one that we can win because Alex Smith doesn't go deep. And when you look at what hurts our cornerbacks, what hurts our secondary, it's the deep ball.
I mean, I can see it. Alex Smith has never gone deep. He's been like he's like Hasselbeck,
yeah.
You know. Very much in the same mold as Matt Hasselbeck was, and just kind of dinks and dunks you all the way up the field. But, I mean, I'm not going to be on life support as far as my playoff hopes are concerned if they lose that game against the Broncos, because I'll still have hope that they're going to beat the Chiefs. But you're really backing yourself into a wall if you lose that first game. That's the only thing I'm saying.
Yeah, and the Titans should have the advantage of coming out of the bye week, having the extra time to prepare for the Broncos. Trevor Siemian is not a great quarterback by any means. You know, their defense is looking tired. It's looking weak. So, I don't know. I guess we'll go ahead and wrap it up. Dan, you got any last thoughts on the Titans right now?
No, I think that's it. I mean, anything that we can realistically talk about as far as the future, I think, has been pretty well covered.
Right on. All right. So, everybody, check out the show at MusicCityMiracles.com. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find Dan at DanOnMikeTN. You can find me at AugustWest_MCM. And Titans, let's go. That beautiful.